Dan, this is Brian Clark. I write for WizBusiness.com in Madison.
Yes, how you doing?
Good, good. I have to apologize. I may cough at you. I have a bit of a cold.
I'm just recovering from mine. Matter of fact, I've had it for like a month, so it's like, geez. Hopefully you won't have yours that long.
In any case, I was wondering if you could tell me what you'll be talking about at the conference on April 23rd.
Yeah, I've got a couple of key themes, and I could go through some of those with you, and if you find something you like and want to spend more time on, then we could do that if you'd like.
Sounds good.
Okay, first of all, I'm going to talk to them about how you can gain competitive advantage in new ways, and there are many ways that we compete, and in manufacturing, often we end up competing primarily around price. It all seems to end up kind of funneling down to price. And even though they do have other things like service and quality, there are many ways that we can compete. And let me just give you a quick little list. We can compete on price, reputation, image, service, quality, design, time or speed, a few more, values, experience, innovation, loyalty, knowledge. I mean, those are just some of the ways you can compete. And what we tend to do by default as manufacturers is we have a couple of areas that we compete on strongly, and we tend to ignore the rest. And then secondly, with those areas we compete, for example, price or service, we're basically doing the same thing as our competitors are doing. In other words, we're not really differentiating or redefining how we compete on price or service or quality or design or any of those things. So one of the things I'm going to talk about is how to use technology to change the rules of how you compete in all these areas.
Okay.
Now, I could give you an example or something, but you want me to give you a few more to see if you want to circle back to that one, or do you want to stay on that one for a second?
Well, yeah, I had noticed that your title is, and we can get back to it, is Technology Forecaster.
I'm a technology forecaster and business strategist. I do both of those, and I've been doing this for 25 years, and what we do, I started a company, usually 25 years ago. We research global innovations in all areas of technology.
So are you sort of a futurist?
Or? Yeah, I'm basically a technology futurist.
How do you tell what's around the corner in terms of technology?
Well, I've got a 25-year track record of being right about it, and I've got 6 books that are in 13 languages that have been right about it, and the way I, there's a couple of ways that I do that. One is, I leave out the parts I can be wrong about. Now, that's, and I know it, whenever I say that, it usually gets somebody to laugh like you did, but on the other hand is, I found a way to find how you can be right on a whole lot. And part of what I'm going to be showing them is how they can accurately anticipate the future. I'm going to teach that. I come from a science background, and I developed a scientific method for doing this forecasting. And I'm going to, instead of just coming in and fishing for them, in other words, giving them some predictions and some strategies for success and leaving, I'm going to actually teach them how to fish. I'm going to show them how to identify the hard trends, the ones that will happen versus the ones that might happen. One of the reasons for that is strategy based on uncertainty has high risk. Strategy based on certainty has low risk. Let me just give you a real quick example. Do you think that in the near future the cell phones will have not only streaming video, as many of them do now, but it will be in high definition?
Probably, yeah.
Now, do you think that might happen, or do you think that will happen?
I think it will happen.
And you're right. Of course it will. Are you certain about that?
Well, no.
Well, as a forecaster, I'd say, yeah, definitely. Because as I look at how fast bandwidth is accelerating, and as the price drops, and I'm looking at how fast the storage and the amount of data that we can store is accelerating as the price drops, and I look at how fast computer processing is accelerating in its power as the price continues to drop, it's pretty easy to see that we're going to be doing high-definition streaming on our phones in just a short time. Now, that's just one little area of certainty. What if we were certain about a whole lot of things? Well, I'm going to show them how many things they can absolutely be certain about and give them some ways of doing that. By the way, I just mentioned three things that I am going to also point out to the audience. And let me put it to you this way, because it's really, I think, pretty dramatic. There's a what I would call a perfect storm of technology-driven change that is about to hit us all and affect every industry. And it is going to be both challenge and opportunity. It's going to be a disruption and opportunity. Now, a quick example. Technology disrupted the photography industry when all of a sudden we had digital cameras. Technology completely disrupted the music industry with MP3s.
Yep.
Well, I'm about to say at this speech, you haven't seen nothing. Those two were fully predictable. I predicted those way over 10 years before they happened. And I'm going to give them a whole bunch of other industries that are going to be going through massive disruption. Now, if you know about something before it happens, it actually is a huge opportunity, because obviously Apple and others took advantage of that change that was taking place in the music industry and made billions of dollars. And the same thing happened with photography, and those companies that saw the future and got into digital photography and made the switch. Just like the companies that switched to digital cell phones from analog first and saw that coming, did amazingly well. Motorola, by the way, was slow to switch from analog to digital, and they suffered for almost 10 years because of that, with slow growth and slow sales. So those companies that can see the future coming before it happens accurately and produce products and services that fit that, and or take their current products and services and modify them to take advantage of it, they always have good rewards. So I'm going to try it now. So this perfect storm, what's driving it? Well, it's actually not very complex. And you want me to talk more about this? Is this a good subject? Okay.
Yes.
I don't want to get off target here, Brian. Okay. It's three things that we've heard about and talked about for a long time, but they're doing something they've never done before. The three things are, first of all, processing power. Now, most of your readers will know that, will be familiar with Moore's Law. Processing power doubles every 18 months as the price drops in half.
Is that still happening?
It's definitely. It's been happening for 40 years.
Okay.
And as a guy who's been accurate for 25 years, I could say there's no end in sight. It just keeps going. But an interesting thing about doubling is that if you graphed out the power of processing power of computers, you would see the graph doesn't go straight, straight off at an angle. It actually looks more like a hockey stick. It starts out slow. It stays low for a long time, and all of a sudden it sweeps up fast. Now, a quick example. To go from a 5 megahertz chip to a 500 megahertz chip took 20 years. To double that, to go from a 500 megahertz chip to a 1 gigahertz chip, actually only took 8 months. And that was about 4 years ago. So the point is that in the 80s and the 90s, and even in the year 2000, 2001, 2003, change was relatively slow in terms of how powerful our computers were. But now, all of a sudden, it's like on a hockey stick. It's starting to get on the stick part. It's going up fast. Another quick example of that is over a year ago, the Sony PlayStation came out. If that Sony PlayStation would have come out 4.5 years earlier, it would have cost millions of dollars, and we would have called it a supercomputer.
Uh-huh.
So our cell phones in the next couple of years will have the power of the types of computers today we're paying many, many, many tens of thousands of dollars for, because that curve is going up steeply. But I'm there to tell them it's bigger than that, because bandwidth, high-definition bandwidth. Well, do you remember like 512K modems? You know, the slow modems?
Uh-huh.
Well, try one today, but put a lot of time aside, because it's really slow, because now you're used to something very fast,
right,
but you haven't seen nothing yet. What I'm going to tell them is the curve on bandwidth is steeper than the curve on processing power. But there's even more than that. Storage, the ability to store data. certain? I am. And the point is that, wow, there's a whole bunch of things we can be certain about. So if we can, if all of this stuff is getting more powerful, and by the way, computing power affects robots. Storage affects robots and automation. Bandwidth affects robots and automation. As a matter of fact, processing power, storage, and bandwidth affect everything. It affects medical research. It affects hospitals. It affects manufacturers. It actually underlies all sorts of every industry. So those things are going off the charts in terms of change. And I want our Wisconsin manufacturers to see the opportunity it brings them and how they can anticipate both problems and opportunities for themselves and their customers.
How should they, what are the opportunities? Wisconsin is a manufacturing state, and or has been, and this is a manufacturing conference. So what will you, or what can manufacturers anticipate?
Well, they can, first of all, because of these changes I've just described, we're going to go through over the next several years, starting right this year, it's starting now already, we're going to go through a period of not change. We're actually going to go through a period of what I would call transformation. And what are we, because, and let me define that for you, because a lot of people use the word transformation, but they're really just saying change. When we went from a spinning disc LP, in other words, or an album, stereo album, to a CD, that was a change. That was not a transformation. It was a spinning disc. It was just a little smaller. It held a lot of stuff. But each individual album still was on each individual spinning disc. When we went from a spinning disc CD to an iPod, that was not a change. That was a transformation. Because now, you know, that one device holds all your albums and maybe even all your friends' albums.
Right.
That was a transformation. Well, we're about to transform how we sell. Every manufacturer has to sell. We're going to transform how we market. Everyone has to do that. We're going to transform how we communicate with each other. We're going to transform how we collaborate with each other. Every manufacturer has to communicate, collaborate, market, and sell. So I'm going to show them how those changes are taking place and what they can do. Because obviously if they can sell more, if they can market better, if they can communicate better, if they can collaborate better, they're going to do much better. And on another thing, I'm going to show them how every product they have, as well as every service they have, can be decommoditized. Now let me just explain what I mean by commodity and decommoditized. Any product that is basically not differentiated very well and is primarily selling on price with low margins, that's called a commodity.
Right.
For example, water. Water is water.
Corn.
Yeah. Corn is corn. But wait a minute. Water isn't just water if you put it in a fancy bottle. As a matter of fact, companies like Penta and others have found that they can charge 10 times more for their bottle of water than other companies can charge for their bottle of water. In other words, I guess you can decommoditize this stuff. Let me give you an example of 7-Up. I was working with Cadbury Schweppes, which is a company that manufactures 7-Up, and they bottle that. And they said, well, we've had 7-Up for decades and decades, and the margins are low, and really, it's, if you really think of it, it's just sugar water, clear sugar water, just like Sprite and their competitors. So how do you decommoditize that? Because the margins are low, and we're all competing on price, and it's, you know, it's hard to differentiate it any further than it already is. So I said, well, you can decommoditize it by making all of the ingredients natural. They did that about a year and a half ago, and sales have been going up, up, up at an amazingly steep rate and haven't stopped yet. By the way, others will start copying them, as you could probably guess. Because whenever anybody does something really great, others copy, and then it becomes a commodity again. So what happens when 7-Up and the others start copying, pardon me, when Sprite and the 7-Up's competitors start copying and doing the same thing and making all their ingredients natural? And the answer is, well, we'll decommoditize again and make all those natural ingredients organic. So, once again, we're back up. You see, you remember, with manufacturers in this state and all the other states know about continuous improvement. a long time. And by the way, if we're all doing something, there's no advantage to it anymore. There's no advantage to doing what everybody else does. I'm going to be in this conference talking about getting new advantage. So I'm talking about continuous decommoditization of what they sell. Why? I want fatter margins. I want to charge more. And I don't think our manufacturers know how to do that. Well, I'm going to show them. Let me give you, if you want, I'll give you one more quick example. I was working with a utility, not in the state, by the way, and they were selling electricity. And, of course, everyone knows electricity is electricity. Basically, electricity is a commodity. Electricity is electricity. And I said, well, why don't you have two types of electricity so you can make more on the second type? And they said, well, there's only one kind of electricity. I said, no, there isn't. So here's what they did. If you are a company that has a lot of servers and computer equipment, and you want the electricity coming into your company to never turn off,
right,
and you want it to never fluctuate in current, because it just so happens all electricity does a little fluctuating in current. You want it to not fluctuate in current at all because you have sensitive equipment. We call that digital electricity, and it'll cost you more. Now, who signed up for it? Well, Google signed up, Microsoft signed up, IBM signed up, Yahoo signed up, Oracle signed up, and then all of a sudden, insurance companies started signing up. Why? They've got a lot of servers, too. And all of a sudden, banks started signing up. Why? They got a lot of computers and servers, too. And now, guess who the new market's going to be? High-end homeowners. Why? Because they've got multiple computers and streaming audio and video in their home. Can I have it, too? Yes, but your electricity will cost a little more. We call it digital.
Was this just marketing, or was there really some difference between...
The difference is exactly what I described. What they did was they took a product, electricity,
right,
and again, electricity is electricity.
Right.
They decommoditized it by wrapping a service around it. If you want your electricity to never turn off and to never fluctuate in current, that'll cost you more.
Okay.
See, so what they did is they took a product and wrapped a service wrapper around it. Well, every single manufacturer in Wisconsin could take their product and wrap a service wrapper around it and charge more.
Huh.
And by the way, if you've got a service, you could wrap a service wrapper around your service and charge more. I'm going to give them examples and talk to them about how they can do that. Do you want some more, or are we...
What are some of the things that you've predicted in the past that have come to fruition?
Oh, I've got hundreds and hundreds of things. And by the way, if you wanted to poke around, you could go onto my website, burrus.com, and find... You know, literally hundreds of them under a PDF download, if you'd like. Or if you want to make it easy, I could even, after this interview, email a list for you. But let me give you a couple right off the top of my head.
Okay.
One is I was giving a speech in about 1991 to the American Booksellers Association. There were 10,000 people selling books, including Barnes & Noble and all those guys. And I said to them in that speech, and by the way, you can still get the audio cassette of that speech, I said, around 1995, we're going to have a virtual bookstore, and I basically described Amazon.com, by the way, which did start in 1995. Now, was I able to predict that the company would be called Amazon.com? And the answer is no. I didn't know what they'd call it. As I said, when you and I first started, I've got to leave out the parts I can be wrong about.
Right.
But I knew the technology was going to be there to do it, and I knew that if you can do it, somebody will do it. And sure enough, there it is. In the year 1983, I said that we would sequence the human gene code by the year 2000. Well, that was a long prediction, and of course we did that in the year 2000. In 1985, I was talking to the top 50 executives of IBM. And at that time, their main money maker was the mainframe, and they were all focused on hardware. That's how they made their money. And I said that right around 1990-91, there was going to be a major shift, and the profitability would shift to servers and PCs as well as software and services. And if they wanted to make money in the 90s, they'd have to make that switch, but they could still have their mainframes. They just wouldn't be as very profitable. By the way, that absolutely did happen in 1993 because IBM did not take action on what I suggested. It lost more money in 93 than any other company on the planet had lost previously. And, by the way, last year, 85% of their profitability came from software services, PCs, and servers.
Since we're probably headed into a recession, if we're not already in one, do you think there's more pressure to innovate, or do you think people will just pull in their horns and not do anything?
I think that if we have a crisis mentality, we'll pull in our horns and probably be suffering for it. If what I want our Wisconsin manufacturers to do is to think in terms of opportunity, now is actually the best time to be doing innovation. First of all, the dollar is continuing to be weak, which means if we do anything in foreign, we have got some amazing potential. Secondly, competing with countries like China, manufacturers in China and other places, if we try to do what they do, we will lose. The key is to not compete with them. Do what the Chinese can't do. China, for example, the Chinese have to do big runs because they've got a long way to ship.
Right.
We already live here in the U.S. We can do short runs. We can do fast engineering changes. See, the key is to not do it, to do what they can't do. And that's how you can gain market share. And I'm going to give some good examples of how Wisconsin manufacturers have won back business from China by doing just that. And the other thing is to take advantage of these changes, because it doesn't matter whether we're in a recession or not. These technology drivers I've described to you are going to happen anyway and present opportunity. So either we're going to be innovating and making some money and doing something with these, or our competitors will, because it will happen.
How about companies that have been dependent on the auto industry? What advice would you have for them?
Well, first of all, I would ask myself, what are our core competencies, and what are the things that we are really, you know, what are our basic core manufacturing competencies, and are there other industries we could leverage those competencies to spread our risk? Number one, because I want to spread right now. If I only have one main customer, I'm already at risk. What happens if their industry goes down? Well, example, that's exactly what happened. So if we're too focused on one industry, we've got a high risk going there. So maybe the lesson learned here is there what is the competency that we have? What is our core competency? What are we really good at? And what other industries could use that competency? So that's number one. I'd want to be doing that. And notice that doesn't involve lean manufacturing. That involves some strategic thinking.
Right.
Because it isn't the growth, the ability to rapidly grow our manufacturing isn't all just focusing on being leaner and leaner and leaner. If that's all we focus on, actually, I'm worried about us. Because it's going to be, it takes more than that. It takes some thinking and strategic thinking and some repositioning. Another thing is, look at, again, it's a big company, but little companies can do this as well. Apple Computer, their computers, actually in the year 1999 and 2000, there were a lot of people in the press that were saying that Apple was doing bad and may just go out of business. But Apple decided to use some of those curves, those change curves that I've told you about, bandwidth and storage, to create the iPod and iTunes. And what has it done? It's made their computers, their old cash cow, actually increase in sales and do better. So one of the things I want to talk about is how can we create some new cash cows? I mean, if Apple can do it with the iPod and the iTunes, that actually makes their computers, that's their old cash cow, sell better and do more. Why could a small company do that? The answer is absolutely. So I want us to think about what are our new cash cows, our bouncing baby new cash cows that will actually help drive the sales of our old cash cow. We can do that. But if we don't think about it, if we don't try, well, obviously, that isn't going to happen.
Okay. Well, I think I've got enough for a good story. Anything else?
There's a lot that I'm going to cover in there, but I think, you know, I think you've got a sense for what I'm trying to do with them.
Okay.
Thank you very much. When will this come out?
let's see. You're gonna. It's the publication. It's an online publication called WizBusiness.com. It's based here in Madison.
Yep.
And you're based in.
My company is based just outside of Milwaukee, Heartland, Wisconsin. I work all over.